That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club, originally recorded October 2017. Episode 15, Ditto.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club, the podcast in which we take an irreverent and sometimes irrelevant look at the top grossing movies of the last 70 odd years. This time round it's 1990's Ghost, starring Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore.
I don't know about you guys, but Davey and I watched this film on Friday the 13th, and so it seems appropriately spooky that we watched a movie about a ghost.
And it's pretty close to Halloween, also, at the time of recording.
We did indeed watch this film on Friday the 13th.
I watched it this morning.
I don't think that makes
sense.
I
watched it on Thursday the 12th.
Thursday the 12th. Saturday the 14th. Ooh.
Yep.
Well, that got derailed pretty quickly. This is a 90s romantic thriller. Thankfully, more thriller than romantic in some places. But let's get opening thoughts from everybody. Opening thoughts from you, Joe, please.
I like this movie. I've always liked this movie. I used to have a thing, probably still have a thing for Patrick Swayze. And yeah, I'd forgotten that literally like the very opening sequence sort of starts out like a horror movie.
Yeah, that was weird.
I'd forgotten that part. That was weird. That was kind of cool. But yeah, the rest of the film was as I remembered. And yeah, it was still awesome.
Yes, there was definitely a jump scare on the titles at the start, which I thought was quite amusing for a film that had no real horror elements following it. Daisy, your first thoughts, opening thoughts?
Of all the supernatural comedy crime drama romance movies I've watched, this was the best.
And how many have you watched?
I can't think of any others that fit all categories, supernatural comedy crime drama romance.
So this is it now. I'm trying to think of one as well. I'm not sure you could really class this as a comedy either, really.
Oh, Whoopi Goldberg was brilliant in it. Come on.
Yeah,
Whoopi Goldberg was
definitely a comedy element, yeah.
Supernatural comedy, crime, drama, romance. That's what it was. That's its genre. And it nailed that genre.
Fair enough. And Sammy, your opening thoughts?
I had never seen this movie before, and I thought I knew what to expect, and I didn't quite get what I expected. But that was a good thing.
What were you expecting?
I was expecting a lot more schmaltz.
Aha! You didn't know about schmaltz. The comedy crime drama elements.
I didn't know any of like the crime stuff or whatever. I just knew that there was a ghost and it was like Swayze and he was Demi Moore's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was my sort of thing, was that I had completely forgotten how young Demi Moore was.
She was so small, and I swear I had that haircut around the same time that she had the haircut in the film.
Yeah,
fun fact, when they cast her, she had long hair, and they did not know she was cutting her hair.
Oops. Well, it worked, so.
Yes. When they turned up and she had the hair, and they were like, oh, whoa, not expecting. Actually, kind of works for the character. Let's roll with it.
I thought she looked super cute.
Yeah,
she did. I thought it was a great look. It was so cute.
I hadn't seen this film either, so I wasn't sure what to expect. And as Sammy said, I was expecting possibly a little bit more romance, a little bit less thrillery crime stuff.
But I did wonder why you were saying that you hated it before you'd even seen it, because it's a good film.
I know, the last romance I saw was Titanic, and we all know how much I loved that.
But this is not Titanic.
If you have yet to hear the Titanic episode, then go back a couple of episodes and listen to it, because, yeah. It did not go well for many of us. But this is a slightly different matter, and for one thing, it's substantially shorter. Although I did have a major problem with this film. And that is that the music for it, the refrain, is exactly the same refrain as the 1970s Battlestar Galactica music.
Oh, really?
And if you don't know what I mean, go and listen to them both. I'd stick them up on YouTube, because we did that last night to test it. And the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do is exactly the same.
Oh, wow.
It was really, really distracting.
I've never seen the original BSG, so I would never have picked up on that.
Oh, no, because I'm old, so therefore I have.
I mean, yeah.
Well, we watched about an hour of it last night after watching Ghost, didn't we?
We did, just to sort of purge the two from my mind, I think, so the two would not be mixed together again.
And now I have the main theme from Battlestar Galactica stuck in my head.
So we could make this a supernatural comedy, crime drama, romance in space.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I mean, they are written by two completely separate composers.
Yes.
One was Maurice Jarre. I don't know if that's in relation to Jean-Michel Jarre or not. Probably not.
And
the other was Stu Phillips. But yes, yeah, so they are very different. But it was just the refrain, almost note for note. And I confess I am quite tone deaf, so it might have been slightly different. But in my head, it sounded the same.
It wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't. But there's definitely a similarity in terms of sort of the note business.
So yes, 1990s Ghost. Let's get into the plot of this film then. Patrick Swayze stars as Sam Wheat, who is a banker. And you can tell that due to the very egregious... I was going to say 90s fashions, but this was filmed very late 80s released in 1990. Yeah.
There were definitely 80s suits and an 80s quiff.
Yeah.
So I went through my notes and I'd written this is very 90s, but actually it wasn't because they were filmed probably 88, 89 when it was being filmed. So late 80s fashions. But yes, there was definitely suits like that happening. Patrick Swayze's character Sam is in a relationship with Molly Jensen, who is a talented potter, apparently.
Yes, but not a Harry. Not a
Harry Potter.
I think she's a sculptor in general rather than...
Yeah, she's an artist.
Purely a potter.
Yeah, I mean, we do see some of her work in its sculptures, but we also see, obviously, there's the famous scene in a minute that is the sort of the two of them making pot together.
Yeah, that happened like really early on in the movie.
Yeah, I was confused by that because I was sure that was Patrick Swayze.
I thought,
spoilers, he was dead as a ghost.
Yeah,
but
I thought
no, apparently
too,
not.
Yeah.
You can't make pottery as a ghost.
Well, this was it, and this is what confused me slightly, and I was expecting it to be a reprise later on. I will get to the bit that I thought that was in. I won't say it now because that kind of jumps right to the end. But no, apparently not.
I don't think you can really say you can't do pottery as a ghost with this film, though, Joe, because if you can't suspend your disbelief in terms of ghosts can do pottery, then you probably can't watch the movie at all.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It's just the only sort of movements for at the beginning was sort of he managed to just like flick stuff and hit stuff and
I was expecting the ghost pottery to be she could kind of feel his presence around her as she was doing the potteriness, but obviously not because he was a fully corporeal alive human being at that time.
Yeah, yes. it was just a very messy scene that made me uncomfortable because of the mess.
It was pottery sex basically.
I know, but it was so messy.
Patrick Swayze said that. Patrick Swayze said that pottery scene was the sexiest thing he'd ever done on film.
Now, I have to say, as a person who has a lot of, you know, sensory sensitivities and all that jazz, the feeling of, like, doing pottery, it's so smooth and nice and just a really nice feeling to work with your hands. But it's also super muddy and messy and gross and just, you know, would get everywhere. And I just watching them, like, holding hands and getting all touchy-feely and getting it all over the place. I'm like, oh, just go wash your hands. And then they skipped the scene where they obviously went and washed. They somehow did, but we didn't see that. And that was really frustrating to me.
That was just really weird because it's like, oh, and they're so into it. And then we cut to the bedroom and they're very, very, very clean and dry.
I know. It's like, clearly there had to be like a comfort break in there where they went and like thoroughly washed their, you know, sort of hands and forearms to get all
the mud
and crap off.
Should we just pause the sexy times while we go and wash ourselves? Yeah. Okay. And now resume sexy things. Yeah,
like, with equal measures of passion. It's just, come on.
Yeah,
we have slightly missed out a bit, so we've gone straight for the sexy times, which
of course
isn't the
Before we backtrack, can I give you some fun facts?
Yes,
about Maurice
fun
Jarre.
Fact upon.
Go for it.
Composer Maurice Jarre is in fact the dad of Jean-Michel Jarre, the famous French bleepy bloopy musician. Though, even though they both pursued careers in music, Maurice split up with his wife Jean-Michel's mum when little Jean-Michel was only 5 years old, and he moved to America at that point, and so Jean-Michel was in fact raised pretty much exclusively by his mum and probably wasn't that close with his dad.
Fair enough. I'm not sure the breaking up as a family is classed as a fun fact, but we'll go with that one.
It's a sad fact, but hey! Also, you know... music. Yay.
Yep.
I'm sure Jean-Michel Jarre is a very happy man.
Shall we go back to the start of the film? Not actually the start of the podcast, but shall we just...
Okay, because we
need to introduce a couple of other characters that we have yet to see, although we have seen but yet to talk about. So yes, Sam is a banker. No pun intended.
Why would that be a pun?
Merchant banker rhymes with...
Oh. It's rhyming slang.
Yep. It's rhyming slang rather than pun, yeah. So Sam and Molly move into a lovely new New York apartment.
Which is very cool.
In a scene that involves demolition that I'm sure is illegal in many ways, certainly not up to code, and unnecessary shirtlessness.
Yeah, no, seriously.
No. This was just ridiculously
gratuitous, and it was like, really? Yeah.
This is the introduction of the other sort of main character, who's Carl Brunner. And again, he was also shirtless, and that's the bit I think was possibly unnecessary.
Yeah, but no. Patrick Swayze, for reasons we'll get to shortly, definitely unnecessary shirtlessness.
Anyway.
So, yes, we have Carl and Sam, who are friends and both bankers.
They are both bankers, yes.
They are definitely bankers. Yes. Carl more so. Going into work.
Carl's definitely a big banker. Yep.
A kind of amusing scene in the lift where they're discussing...
Oh, yeah, see, that was unnecessary.
But it was just setting up their camaraderie, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like, it kind of proved that those two were good friends and they were having sort of... They were in a lift, a very busy lift, and they were discussing Carl's rash and how contagious his cough was. Yeah. And they were obviously just taking the mick, but it did show that the two of them were very good friends.
Yeah. When we'd already seen that they were good friends because he was helping out with the demolition DIY, but
at that point he was shirtless and covered in dust, so you might not have picked up it was the same person.
Yeah.
So they're at work, they're in the bank. Sam discovers some discrepancies.
No. He's got a meeting way ahead of yourself. Yeah, he's got to speak Japanese first, and he's got to give Carl the code so that he can do the transfer.
Transfer 900,000 by 10 a.m.
Because he can't, because he's got to meet with the Japanese dudes.
Who were there early, so he doesn't have time for that.
Yeah, so he gives Carl the code.
Which is a little bit coincidental.
Which is the whole sort of thingy. Once he gets the code, it's like, ooh, well, I can do transfer this all money and stuff. So you can't skip ahead. You're missing out half the film.
Yeah, he's way away from discovering discrepancies.
Yeah.
Not according to the synopsis I'm reading, is not.
Your synopsis is wrong.
So yes, we have just after the lift, we have a scene where they both get into work and discover that a set of Japanese clients are there early. We've seen Patrick Swayze trying to speak very horrible Japanese, and then another call comes in and another bank client. Was it, how much did we say it was?
$900,000.
$900,000 into another account. And obviously to do that, Swayze can't do that because he's got to be in the meeting with a Japanese client. So he gives Carl, I think he said a MAC code?
MAC code. We saw it on the computer screens later on, MAC.
Which obviously is not...
A computer address.
Well, it's not what I would think of as a MAC address, exactly. No. But obviously it's something that is...
It's a banking thing, I'm guessing.
Banking thing. Possibly fictional banking thing, who knows? So yes, the point being that he has given Carl his code, which means that pretty much
Think twice about giving him because
they're really good friends.
Trusts him with his life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, literally.
Yes.
But yeah. Well, mainly also because he changes it afterwards anyway, so it's one of those things that it gets changed off, and he just needs him to do him that favor.
Do we then have the money issue?
No, then they're at the house and they're getting the big stone angel in through the window and she's moaning about his chair. And I was like, oh, the chair. Are we going to see lots of this chair later on? Is she going to be like, oh my God, and this is this chair? No, we never saw the chair ever again.
No, this is true. It did seem to be making something of nothing. And the angel itself, although the angel was seen very briefly again, didn't seem to really...
Yeah.
I don't know, have a lot to do with it.
No, it just established that they like weird large art.
Yeah. Sam was then like, oh, I'm just worried because everything's so amazing in my life and I'm just waiting for the bubble to burst.
Stop
and that's where we all wrote
Sam.
Down foreshadowing.
That is exactly when I wrote down foreshadowing. yes, there was quite a lot of that. They were talking about plane crashes and things going wrong, and it was as subtle as a, you know, large red
kicking
sign.
I'm
going to die.
Much like Mutiny on the Bounty, it was in the title of the film.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yes,
it was inevitable that somebody was going to be a ghost, and we knew that it was going to be the Swayze.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's because, well, I knew that because I'd seen the film before, but I guess it was...
Way to spoiler
obvious.
Yourself, Joe. Jeez, don't you a memory wipe before you watch it for this podcast so you can
I'm
come
not
in
a
fresh?
Computer
so we speaking of neither were most of the things they were using but
then she's Molly's worried in the night because he was worried and so that's when she starts doing late night pottery.
Yes, you see, now we have the pottery sex.
Now we have pottery sex, which is wrong in every sense. I mean, the pot she was throwing was quite phallic to start off with.
I found him really annoying at the start of this scene because she's there making this really beautiful pot and then he just comes along and like pokes it and makes it all collapse.
I know, it was kind of nice pot. It was so
yeah.
Performance issues, it happens.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of cute.
I was just annoyed at him, like, you've ruined it. Why did you do that?
Because that gives them an excuse to get all
fondly
messy and...
Yeah. Because,
and
you know,
make the pot together.
She's an expert artist, so she can make pots at any point, but, you know, canoodling.
Yeah. So we have phallic
word.
Pottery, followed by, in my notes, it just says, boingy boingy.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Because that's, unfortunately, what happens.
Extremely poetic descriptor there, sweetheart. Yeah. I like
Whereas
it.
I wrote things like cue sensual clay fondling.
Also good.
So we have the iconic... pottery scene, as you said, slightly earlier than we thought it was going to be, and then the cleanup and actual boingy boingy.
Which
all of
I
which
was glad
is going
that
on.
They didn't do. Like, then we just saw them, they were clean, they were in the bedroom, and then they're still wearing the same amount of clothes and collapse down on the bed. And they don't feel the need to gratuitously show us this sex that happens, obviously, afterwards. We've had
boingy.
The build-up to it, and that's all we need. You know,
yeah,
I'm
I mean,
glad
it,
that
it,
like that was reserved enough, and I think it was part of the reason why this scene has become so iconic, because it wasn't overdone.
Oh no, it wasn't gratuitous at all. It was really, really quite, yeah, as you said, well done. Sorry. Just reiterating, I agreed with your point.
So yeah, now we get the next day, and we have Carl... trying to access some information on the computer. I assume because the MAC code has changed, he can't go into it. But obviously, because he knows how to use computers, he hits the monitor on the side of it to get it working.
He's a banker, not a computer engineer.
I know, but as a computer engineer, don't hit... Don't.
See, I wrote in my notes here, he's got a problem with his accounts. Probably because you gave your password to your mate earlier, dude. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you
so
know.
He's finding too much money in his account or in an account.
Yeah, in some of the client accounts, I think.
Yeah. And my notes say too much money in an account followed by too much foreshadowing in this film.
Oh, come on.
It's not subtle in places, though, is it, Joe? You have
is
to admit
it meant
that.
To be subtle? Does it have to be subtle?
No, it doesn't have to
I
be subtle. It's
not.
A bit silly, and I don't mind that.
I take that as part of the comedy aspect of the film.
So Carl comes in, Carl offers to investigate the matter. At this point, we don't know why he is being helpful, other than the fact that he is his friend. But Sam says he'll investigate himself.
And then Carl quizzes him about what exactly he's doing that evening.
Yes,
really?
I got
really
notes.
That was like not...
Subtle checking of whereabouts.
Yeah,
like
don't
my
be
note
suspicious
says.
At all, Carl.
No.
To be fair,
also, where are you tonight?
I think that he said... Mum rather than Molly, and got very confused thinking that they were brothers for a brief second.
I think he said Moll, which
yeah.
sounds a lot like Mom. Mm.
But no, the Sam and Molly are going to see a play.
Macbeth.
I thought it was Shakespeare, but I wasn't sure. Yes. Macbeth this evening. So They know where he's going to be.
Also has a ghost.
It does indeed. Actually, yes, it does. Good point.
Hey, I knew some Shakespeare.
There are quite a lot of ghosts in Shakespeare, to be fair.
True. Yes. I did just watch Hamlet last week that also had a ghost.
It's a ghosty play, yep. That's how you classify the different Shakespeares. You know, there's the wedding plays, and then there's the ghosty
comedies,
plays.
Comedies, the tragedies, the ghosts.
The ghosty plays, yep.
Mistaken identity.
You can tell the comedy plays because there's no humour in them at all.
No!
The humour may have changed over time. But...
You are incorrect.
So yes, we see Sam and Molly leaving the theatre. Sam is saying how much he liked it, which Molly agrees because you could tell that by the amount he was snoring.
Oh,
which was yeah.
Did you relate there, Dave?
I quite like Shakespeare.
Oh, do you?
And I'm not allowed to fall asleep during watching these films. So, so they're walking back from the theatre, and two things struck me. Well, main thing struck me was that. This is supposed to be New York, and I've never been to New York, I admit that. But it seemed awfully quiet.
Absolutely,
and there was no
deserted.
One around.
Yes, that was weird. That was weird.
That was weird. That was very foreboding, foreshadowing for what, words.
So they're walking down this dark alley, and I wrote crime alley, ?
But before that, we find out that Sam never says to Molly, I love you. He only ever says ditto.
Yeah, so they have the whole heart-to-heart.
And doesn't she propose to him as well?
And I wrote, what a douche.
Yes, I think she does propose to him at this point. And I my notes say heart-to-heart, comma, must be murder time. And yes.
It's time to die.
Yes, it is.
The tense music was building for a while there as well, which kind of gave it away.
Yeah, yes. A little bit.
So they're walking down this darkened alley and they're attacked by a mugger.
Yay!
Who demands... the wallet from Sam. Sam fights him. There's a gunshot. The robber runs off and Sam initially chases him before turning around and seeing the fact that actually it's his body lying
on the
floor.
At that point, when he was chasing down the street and we hadn't seen Molly, I thought it was Patrick Swayze that was dead in this movie, but it must be Demi Moore.
I thought that as well. No, yeah. I honestly thought that it was very effective because
I didn't.
Was for a second thinking, you've seen it before though, Joe.
I didn't the first time.
I was thinking, is it? No, surely not. But yeah, so he runs back to Molly and finds Molly cradling the bloodied corpse of his old body.
And then go into the light, Sam.
Yep.
Go into the light. There's light. Go into the light.
Well, then the movie would end after 10 minutes.
Yes. Go into the light, Sam.
Sam gets the option. We have a beam of white light full of like God rays and that he can walk towards.
It's like light bits in the light. It's weird. And
Taken up to what we assume is heaven, because this film does kind of rely a little bit on standard westernized religions. And also, he's a banker. Are they generally the sort of people who get sent up to heaven?
He was a good banker, though.
Yeah, he was a nice dude. I don't know what the exact rubric for sort of, you know, heaven admission is, but I'm sure he did okay.
Like, you know, he was diligent about making sure that 900,000 got transferred. He wasn't angry at the Japanese for being early in. He just took that all in his stride. And, you know, his worst foible at this point is he ruins pottery and says ditto instead of I love you. I don't think that's things worth kicking someone out of heaven for.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, Gosh supposedly works in mysterious ways, but that's...
So then I wrote in my notes, so now Molly turns into a vigilante hell-bent on revenge for her lover's death. She dresses in a manner to terrify all criminals and she becomes... No?
That's Kill Bill, isn't it?
That's Batman.
Or Batman.
Batman.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so...
I haven't seen Kill Bill.
I was kind of excited about Batman Molly and that didn't happen. Spoiler alert,
but it was
no Batman Molly.
Yeah.
She would have kicked ass at being Batman Molly.
Yeah, I think Bat Molly would be a great movie.
Yeah,
but of course he doesn't
move
on.
Let's pitch that, Bat Molly.
He has unfinished business. He needs to know why.
Well, he doesn't at that point. At that point, he's just like, oh, but Molly's over here, so I'm going to stick around.
Yeah, I think he doesn't want to leave he doesn't want to leave the love of his life, which I suspect is a fair reason,
that's
to be honest.
That's pretty fair. I'm pretty sure it was right after this scene, sweetheart, that I came over and I gave you a hug and I said not to get involved in any kind of banking business or go places
or, you know,
late at
fight
night
a mugger.
Where there might be a murder. Yeah.
In New York in the 1990s. Yeah, I did agree not to do that in the 1990s. So yes, my next note in this is, it's worse than that, he's dead, Jim. Because we have the dead body. Molly tries to get help. Eventually, a policeman arrives and then an ambulance, and the body is rushed to the local accident emergency.
Yeah, he's hanging on there, isn't he? Even though he's had the choice of the light. Presumably, if he'd gone up to the light at that point, it would have been flat line on the
body. Would have been game over.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because how can he be a ghost if he's not actually dead?
No. Well, it depends what you believe in, but I mean,
not ghosts for a start, so okay.
But it's the soul. It's the essence of the body. And, you know, if that moves on, the body has no essence, it's just an empty shell. So he's hanging on, therefore, you know, still connected to life. And then, you know, the shell might die and then the essence is still hanging around, and that's how you get ghosts. But, you know, it's not mutually exclusive, you know. There can still be a connection. So if they'd have managed somehow magically to revive him, then he would have been fine.
I wonder what would have happened if they'd have revived him and his ghost was like across town somewhere. Would he have been like sucked back in? Or would it have been like, oh no, he's not here, and so he hasn't like recombined with his body?
But yeah, so Sam slowly realises that he is a ghost and he can't be heard and can't be seen.
And then he starts
to a really
chatting,
nice old guy.
Yeah, chatting with another ghost.
Yeah, so he gets spooking to...
He
gets speaking to another guy in the hospital.
Oh, I like spooking. He's spooking to another guy in the
hospital. Spooking.
Unintentional typo.
Unintentional pun there. I like it.
Yeah.
Halloweenian slip.
A Halloweenian slip. I like it.
So, yes, he's dead. Sorry.
He's dead, bye. Jim.
Yep.
But we watched someone else.
Apparently it isn't easy being dead, though, because, you know, you can't do a lot of things.
It's not easy being green, either.
No. Well, he's not rotten just yet, so he'll get there eventually.
Gross.
The next big question I had was, would you go to your own funeral?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you?
I guess.
Really?
But before we get to the funeral, he watches someone else in the hospital die, and then the light and the other ghost goes up in the light, and it's like, oh yeah, that's heaven. And he's just like,
I wasn't paying attention in Sunday school. That's what I should have been doing.
Yeah.
Oh, oops.
Oops.
So yes.
And I wrote, I told you should have gone into the light.
Yep. So he goes to his own funeral.
Yeah. I would totally do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm that kind of paranoid person that wants to know what people are saying.
And what else are you going to do? Like, oh, my funeral's on, I don't know, I'll go to the cinema. No, you're going to go to your funeral.
I'd have gone to the cinema.
Oh, you could go to the cinema anytime though, but you could like watch all the films for free.
Oh my God, that would be so amazing.
That would be cool.
It's just like, so what's your unfinished business as a ghost? Oh, it's just, you know, there's still movies that I haven't had a chance to see.
Yeah.
You know, the new Thor movie's coming out. I'm not going to miss that, am I? And then they've got, you know, after that, there's Paddington 2, and I'm not ready.
There's the whole Fantastic Beast series that we've barely even started yet. I mean, come on.
Like, I can't ascend until I've seen Justice League and can make a fair assessment about how meh it is.
Yeah, so that might be the one benefit of being dead is you can get into cinemas for free.
Also, you don't have to pay to get on the subway, but we're not there yet.
No.
Then he just creepily hangs around the flat where Molly is. He's just like, oh, I'm just chilling at the flat, hanging out with my living girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did write, so you're dead. So you spend your entire time moping around the house.
Like, you could go anywhere and do anything, and you're just going to mope.
It just felt really creepy.
Love of his life is not dead.
You're probably sad about that.
But she didn't know he was there, and it was like he was, like, voyeuristically spying on her. It was a bit creepy.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I found it creepy. Like, that's I'd fine. Be creeped out, you know, if my husband's ghost was hanging around and I didn't know he was there and he was just watching. I'd be like, that's creepy.
Perhaps he's there now. Oh, no, he's not dead, is he?
He's not dead. Chris. He's still alive. I checked just before we started recording. Still alive.
Aww.
Yeah, yeah, I do that often. I check he's still alive.
Aww.
It's a good thing to check, really.
I'm very romantic. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. You dead? No. Right, carry on.
Good, yeah.
As long as you don't put yet on the end of the sentence, you're covered.
I'm getting better.
I feel happy.
So, yes, Molly obviously is still distraught, and not only because there's a dead ghost haunting her house, but then, oh, look, Carl, the good guy.
Oh, yeah, speaking of creepy, yay. Cue Carl. Yeah.
And blah. It suggests blah. Molly takes blah. A walk with him. So they go for a walk, but Sam can't bear to go with them. And also, there's a thing with doors. Although he was told by the ghost in the hospital that doors aren't that bad.
No.
However, just after they leave, we have the mugger, who is the same person who murdered Sam, comes into the apartment.
The mugger is also a burglar. A burglar yeah. with a key.
So he has a key, so it's not,
not a burglar
just breaking
if he's
in.
Got a key, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, it's less breaking and entering, more just entering.
Yeah. But...
still burgling if he takes something, isn't it? So.
Yeah. So he can't... obviously, Sam being dead and a ghost can't do anything to stop him. The mugger wanders around blatantly looking for something, but while he's upstairs looking for something in their sock drawer, it looks like, Molly comes back. Obviously,
oh,
this
no.
is a concern because Molly potentially in danger. However, Sam has realised that the thing he can interact with at this point is their cat.
Yay,
because cats
are
can detect
awesome.
Spirits. And yes, cats are awesome.
Ghost cat power, I wrote.
Yay!
Yeah. So, Sam scares the cat. The cat jumps and attacks the mugger, who then
Woo!
Flees.
Yay!
Go cat. Go cat.
So yeah, so Sam follows the mugger back to his Brooklyn apartment and learns that the man's name is Willie Lopez.
Handily written on the door as he goes in. That was
yeah, because everybody
handy.
Has their name on the door on the outside of their flats.
Yep.
And he was actually sent by an unknown party, but this wasn't just a sort of crime of convenience. He was actually set up to be mugged.
But on the way there, they go on the subway.
Yes, they do. They go via the subway.
With Angry Train Ghost, yay!
Angry Train Ghost, who looks really familiar, but no one can think why.
Yes.
We did actually look him up last night. Who else was he? What else had he been in?
Oh, God, this is that guy who's been in everything.
Yeah.
He's been in everything. I no longer have the list of things that he's been... Hang on, I've got my iPad out. I'm going to bring it up. Because this is one of those guys. He's got one of those very recognizable faces that lends itself really, really well to just being a character actor. And anytime you need someone, you know, sort of tall or with a sort of distinctive
Vincent
face.
Vincent Chiavelli.
Anytime yeah. you want an Angry Train Ghost.
He was one of the... If memory serves, he was one of the thugs in Batman Returns.
He was. He died at 57.
The same age yeah. Patrick Swayze died.
Sad times.
Oh dear.
Both died of cancer, but different kinds.
Sad times. Okay, here are some
Not
of the
a fun
things
fact,
that
but it was a fact.
In.
He's been in lots of things.
He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and he was in Batman Returns, and he was in Tomorrow Never Dies, and...
He was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my God, that's
Uncle
where
Anios.
I knew him from too. Yes, yes,
yeah,
thank you.
He was the gypsy uncle.
Yes.
Which is how I know him. He was also Dr. Kaufman in Tomorrow Never Dies.
So they're on the subway and Sam is attacked by another ghost. We can tell he's a ghost because he runs through one of the metal poles that you stand next to in the train and then attacks Sam.
Yeah, and the fact that you can see him and interact with him, yeah.
And more importantly, he interacts with the train itself and smashes the glass of the window.
He did the thing to the real world. Oh my God,
so
that won't be significant at all. Wait,
that
it was obviously going to be significant.
That was a very significant moment.
So yes, obviously there is a way for ghosts to interact with the real world. So he follows Willie, he finds out where he lives, finds out that he is hired to do the mugging.
I wonder who the person could be who he is working for.
We don't know at this point. Who could it possibly be?
There's been nobody being suspicious up to this point.
After leaving Willie's apartment, Sam happens upon the parlour of psychic Oda Mae Brown.
Yay.
Well, it was literally across the road. So.
It was literally across the road.
That was quite fortuitous.
It was Patrick Swayze who recommended Whoopi for the part because he was a great admirer of hers. And she was perfect for this. She is a comedy genius.
She is lovely and I love her and she's my favorite, one of my favorite characters from all of the Star Treks. And so there's a very special place in my heart for Ms. Goldberg.
So Swayze's character walks into the psychic parlor. But it becomes fairly clear that most of what is happening is a con.
Really bad cold reading.
Yeah.
Like, seriously,
this name significant? This one? We found one that works. Great, yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, Oda Mae Brown, obviously played by Whoopi Goldberg. However, it does turn out that she can hear Sam. So she can commune with the dead, but only this one dead person.
At the moment?
At this point, yes.
Well, I think it's just that he's the only dead person that's actually gone in there.
Could well be, yes. Whoopi Goldberg walks into the parlor in a bright gold dress. And I put a dress that even Guinan wouldn't be seen dead in because some of the Star Trek fashion was wild, but not that bad.
Oh, I loved Guinan's hats, though. She always had the most interesting, weird, like, space hats.
Yeah.
In, like, strange shapes, but they always matched her, like, comfortable dresses.
Yeah, so it turns out that she can hear Sam. She can't see him, but she can hear Sam. And Sam convinces her to warn Molly that she is in danger.
By convinces her, you mean he torments her until she does.
Yeah.
It's true. He does. He indeed haunts her until she agrees because he stays in her room at night singing to her very loudly.
Henry VIII, I am.
Yes, which is a fair way of doing it, I feel.
Molly obviously just hangs up when someone phones up and says, "So your dead boyfriend told me to call you." What? No. Hang up.
Hello. What? Hello.
Seriously.
Like, this is a correct reaction. I completely understand why she just hung up. But she doesn't even call back a second time. That's it. Phone once, get hung up on, and that's it. Oda Mae is just like, oh well, tried that, never mind.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
In fairness, she's probably a bit, you know, what the heck? Because you would be a bit what the heck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When a ghost
so,
is talking to you.
Finally manages to convince Molly that Sam is indeed talking to her, or at least
by yelling stuff on the street that only
by
Molly
yelling
could
things
know.
That only Sam would know.
Yes.
So she kind of vaguely believes them.
Enough to go out for coffee.
And so they manage to relay Willie's address to Molly, who then gives it to Carl. Because obviously Carl is the person she trusts the most.
Hmm.
And then she goes to the police because that's the most sensible thing to do. Although, oddly enough, the skeptical police are skeptical of this just bereaved girl saying that her dead partner is back from the dead. I did like the fact that the police were like, we've got better things to do than that.
Yeah.
Which,
again, is an absolutely fair reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they do convince, Molly does convince them to go and have a look, see if there is actually a report or rather police record about Willie. But no, there isn't. However, there is one for Oda Mae, and there's a long, quite substantial one as Oda Mae's career as a forger and a con artist. Because shockingly, this con artist, fraudulent psychic, has done this before. So who'd have thunk it?
Well, not this specific thing, but her
business. No, but she has a record
in general.
Of,
is very,
yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Meanwhile, Sam decides to follow Carl and then is devastated to find that actually it's Carl who was employing Willie to do the mugging.
Although he goes from upset to angry very quickly, understandably.
True. Yeah, but it's sort of like, it's not exactly a shocking revelation, is it, that it's the partner that did it, so.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, there's not many people in the film at all, so, you know.
No, this is true. It's slightly odd at this point to bring in a brand new character, so it's going to be one of the people we'd seen already.
Mm. When Molly is brooding after visiting the police back in the flat, and she kind of rolls that jar that's got, what, the lucky penny or something in it. And as soon as it bumps down one step, it just smashes into loads of pieces. And I was like, what? Glass jars don't break that easily.
And then
I found out, fun fact, was that it was meant to be being thrown. And it was Demi that decided that rolling it down the stairs was more in character. So obviously the glass was designed to smash after being thrown.
It would have probably been made out of a lot more convincing then. You know,
exactly.
It shatters well on screen. It's also much safer than using real glass.
Yeah. So instead it was just very unconvincing by smashing as soon as it bubbled down.
It just seems like a bizarrely delicate jar.
I did also notice that Carl is left-handed, so therefore must have been the bad guy.
And I said, excuse you, and I leveled a rude gesture using my left hand at my husband when he said this, because I'm left-handed, and that's not very nice.
So Sam follows Carl back to work and finds out that actually the reason that Carl is doing all of this is because he's laundering money for the drug dealers.
Yeah.
And he was actually using Willy to rob Sam to get his apartment key, and then use that to get hold of Sam's passbook full of passwords.
Well, I think he was probably hoping that he had the Mac code book on him.
With him in his...
I thought it was in his wallet.
Yeah, so I think that's why he was mugging him to get the Mac codes directly.
Yeah.
There wasn't meant... I get the distinct feeling that no one was meant to die.
No, I think this was supposed to be a fairly, you know, bloodless killing.
Yeah, because if someone mugs you and they have a gun... Don't fight. Just give them your wallet. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're a banker who probably is fairly well insured.
Yeah. Mm. It's not worth dying for, really.
No.
No. I also noticed that this film was indeed brought to you by Reebok.
Yeah, very much so.
Yes.
That was some serious product placement.
Yes, it was.
It worked really well. I didn't notice.
It just went straight past your consciousness into your subconscious, and the next time you go shopping for shoes, you won't know why, but you feel strangely compelled to take an extra look at the Reeboks. Other brands of athletic shoe are available.
Yeah, so they were going through, it's when the scene where they were going through Sam's bits and bobs and bits of paper, including the book that has the passcodes in it, and they were just filing them all into this shoebox that was emblazoned with Reebok all over it.
Yeah,
and we saw that box several times.
But instead it was Reebok front and center for quite a long time. That has all the best things put in it because it is the best box with the best shoes. Best Reebok, best.
I thought it was just coloured so that it was distinctive, so they could tell that, oh no, he's accidentally taking the wrong box.
They could have done that with like a plain blue box instead of a Reebok.
They could have done what they sometimes do on like low budget sitcoms and cooking shows, where they just take a piece of similarly coloured gaffer tape and cover the name of the product with it.
Yes.
Yeah. This week's podcast is brought to you by Reebok.
No, it's not.
I wish.
If Reebok wants to send us some free stuff, I'll be honest, I'm not against sponsorship.
If someone wants to throw things at me, I will take them.
Likewise, I'm just going to put out there that my current personal preference is for Adidas. So if anyone is looking to sponsor the podcast, Adidas,
or anywhere that sells movies for us to keep on actually buying these to watch, that would be helpful too. So anyway, then the creepiest scene in the whole movie happens, where Carl starts like pouring coffee on himself so he can get naked and things.
This made me really uncomfortable.
I hated this so much. I hated this as like a person who's so uncomfortable.
This was
I can't even begin to express
how
horrific and terrible and bad this scene was.
I mean, aside from the fact that he's literally dead a week, if that.
Yeah.
But this was also why I said initially it was unnecessary toplessness, because she has already seen him with his shirt off, and she obviously wasn't interested then. Why would she be interested now?
Because he's a guy, no offense.
Other than, obviously, she's in a state of sort of delicateness, because
vulnerability.
She's vulnerable. Yes. So, you know, he's taking advantage of her vulnerability. And
thank you. That was the word I was looking for, definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Vulnerable.
I've also in my notes, it says there's always one point in a film where it seems to lose my interest and sometimes never gets it back. And with this film, it was certainly when Carl was hitting on Molly. because at that point I went to do some washing up because I was like, oh.
Crucially, dear. Sam got so mad, he jumped at them and knocked over the picture.
Yeah.
Ah, significant.
I obviously missed that little bit.
It was significant because then he's like, oh, and wait, didn't that train ghost guy smash that window as well? Wait, can I? Did I just? Oh, game changer. Game changer. Yep.
Foreshadowing.
Yes.
At that point, we see Sam going back down to the subway, trying to go from train to find the other ghost.
I was expecting it to just be like, and he gets on the train, and there's the train ghost. But instead, they actually did have him have to go through quite a few train carriages to find him. So I was like, oh, they didn't go as cheesy as I thought they would. That is good.
Yeah, that would have been slightly too convenient if he was just on the first car and he was like, hey, it's you again. Get off of my patch, you stupid ghost. This is my haunting.
Exactly. My train.
Listen, you're probably new, but this is the bit that I haunt. You're gonna have to find another place to haunt, buddy. I'm American. I'm trying to do... I can't sound American.
he finds the subway ghost and...
No!
Faces him down and eventually convinces him to teach Sam how to actually interact with real-world objects.
Train ghost is now Master Jedi.
Yay!
Yep.
He's basically the Yoda of this sort of sequence.
Yeah, and he trains for even less time than Luke Skywalker did.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
But then also he's not trying to lift X-Wings out of the swamp. He is just trying to move books and things around.
Kicking a can bottle caps. And things.
Yeah,
bottle caps and kicking cans around.
A shoe, I think.
See, you're trying to push it with your finger. You're not going to be able to push it with your finger. You have to push it with your mind. Oh, okay, got it. There we go.
And we also saw a shot of him pushing a white sneaker off the ground, and I didn't notice whether or not that was a Reebok sneaker, but I suspect it probably was.
Oh, man, I need to go back and find out whether or not that was a Reebok sneaker.
Sam now finds how to find out how to actually interact with the real world again. Or the corporeal world.
Thanks, Angry Train Ghost.
Yes, thanks, Angry Train Ghost, who goes off and we never see ever again.
He just goes around being angry on his train again.
Yeah.
My train!
For all time. My train! So he now can interact with the corporeal world. So goes back and convinces Oda May to actually help him thwart Carl and says he knows how to do it and that will leave her alone forever.
Is that the bit where he comes in and the room's full of ghosts? Or
yes.
Later?
Yes, yeah. So he goes in and this bit I don't think was explained either. Suddenly, all of the ghosts are there talking through Oda May. So words obviously got out in the spooky grapevine.
In the ghost world?
In the ghost world that actually she can speak to the dead. But I don't know how that happened.
No, I don't know how
he hasn't
been
interacting
either.
With the ghosts.
Yeah.
He's not, apart from Spooky Train Guy.
Well, I don't they heard think it on the ghost vine.
That was good.
It seemed a bit, but this also was the point where we saw that actually Oda May could be inhabited by another ghost,
possessed, but also that it drained energy again. Yep. Foreshadowing.
But it mean the ghost was weakened, so again foreshadowing. So
yes, they made sure to explain that to us quite clearly. Possessed and then weak. So I was okay. I will make a note of this. Thank you, film. I don't see this coming up ever again. Oh wait.
Yeah. So Sam persuades Oda May to help him thwart Carl by dressing up in her best outfit and going to the bank to impersonate a.
Well, first of all, the mugger guy Willie Lopez turns up at Oda May's place.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we seem to have skipped because you've got to have Carl getting the MAC code finally and then having the phone call with the client that Sam overheard to know that Oda May had to go to the bank to be...
That was back when he found out that that it was all about this $4 million he was laundering for drug dealers. He watched him set up the account and everything at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I pointed there said there was a point where this film lost my interest. Well, yeah, it didn't really ever get it back. So, there was a scene where we saw Carl creating an account for a
Rita Miller.
It was an entirely fictitious person. But transferring $4 million into that account that would then be used.
A nice round dollars. $4 million. I feel like this is super easy for anyone checking the accounts to follow. Like when you're money laundering, don't you have to do it in like strange numbered chunks and things to make it so it's not obvious? Oh, hey, here's that $4 million I was laundering.
Mm. Yeah, I would suggest not doing it in round numbers.
Yeah, certainly. I think he's not a very good money launderer.
No. Well, I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't suggest doing it at all because obviously it's illegal and I wouldn't in any way, shape or form.
Well, I think it was in odd numbered amounts, but it just ended up that when it was all transferred to this one account, which again, he shouldn't have really done, that's when it suddenly became a nice number because it's a lot easier to write out a check for $4 million than, you know, $3,977,703.17.
True. I did like also that this the scene where he was when Carl was in the bank, sort of doing his nefarious work. He called someone and asked for a number that was on the Rolodex, which in itself seems so late 80s.
Well, yes, but you know, movies sometimes. I mean, it dated itself a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, yeah, so the account has been created with fraudulent money. Carl has spoken to his underworld contacts. Underworld as in criminal underworld as opposed to dead underworld.
No, I know, but it just is like he has underworld contacts. He's just such a loser.
I think it was Willy Lopez turning up at Oda Mae's place, obviously trying to attack her, that convinces her to actually go through with this quite absurd plan. So I feel like they did actually provide good character motivation for Oda Mae there.
Yeah, I mean, she is, as a character, very selfish in many ways. She probably wouldn't have done this at all without that sort of imminent risk of danger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a healthy sense of self-preservation is not necessarily selfish.
So Oda Mae goes into the bank and signs up, gets herself an ID card as Rita Miller.
Oh, she has fake IDs as Rita Miller. She signs a signature card.
Yeah. Which, again, as a convicted fraudster and forgerer, that wouldn't be too difficult.
Yep. Although, but she is now committing fraud. Yeah.
She's a fraudster and a con artist. For someone who is that, she's remarkably not very good at it. She really isn't particularly confident.
Well, she has been caught for her to have that quite long criminal record. But to have quite a long criminal record means she's been caught quite a lot.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So might not be.
She's not great at the whole not getting caught part.
Yeah,
of, yeah, but of fraud. Also, to be fair, she's also got a ghost talking to her, and she's probably still kind of freaked out, and it's probably
that's
put her
bound
off her
to
game.
Give you a little bit of the nerves, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she becomes, according to the bank, Rita Miller. Goes in and withdraws all the money as a bank transfer.
Cashier's check,
thank you, because she initially asked for it in tens and twenties. Which
I love that.
I would have liked to have seen.
That would have been so much fun, though. Just like a big supermarket carrier bags filled with banknotes.
And the look on the guy's face when she says it. And they're like, what?
I was joking.
Yeah no, like, cashier's check, obviously.
Buddy. Come on.
So she gets the check with the money on it and closes the account.
Just in time.
Just in time, because at this point,
Molly
Carl is...
No. Well, two just in times then, because Molly's there, but also it had to be done before 4 o'clock or whatever it was. Was it 4 or 5? And it was only just before. So Carl's
Carl's up on his floor trying to desperately get the money moved to another account and then realises the account has been closed, which obviously is a little bit of a panic on his side.
He was a bit stressed there, wasn't he?
He
also subscribes to the school of hitting computers to make them change what they say.
Yeah. Maybe one of these days it'll actually work out for them. Who knows?
Yep, maybe.
Nope.
It's worth continuing to try? No?
No, possibly not.
Okay.
No, because also, you know, this film sort of it promulgates the idea that it's okay to hit computers, and it's really not.
It's not nice. They don't like it. They want
don't
to
abuse
as
them
a public either. Service announcement on this podcast, can I please say here and now, do not hit your computers. It makes no difference other than hurting your hand.
And possibly
also,
damaging
it's more
the
likely
equipment.
To actually make the computer worse.
It will not help, no, certainly. Unless you are, like me, a fully trained professional IT person, in which case, you know.
You've been taught how to properly
properly instructed on how to hit computers to make them work.
Yeah, there's a whole day on that when we train in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I missed this potentially, but was there a reason why Molly was actually in the bank at that point?
Well, because her boyfriend was a banker and she probably had some papers to sign or she had friends there or something. I assume that was
so
just why.
No, then. No real reason.
We are not given a reason. It is purely coincidental.
Plot of course device. There is a reason, and the reason is plot.
Yes. Yeah.
So she's in the bank at the same time. She sees Oda May in the bank and mentions this to Carl.
So Sam manages to delay her with his paper throwing ghost powers. Yay, putting them
ghost
to good
skills.
Use. Oh yeah.
But she still talks to the weird little dude who they'd conned and finds out, oh, actually not Oda May, Rita Miller, which foreshadowing because then she tells Carl.
Does she tells Carl everything because she's an idiot? No, she's not an idiot. Carl's just evil.
Yes.
Yeah, and she trusts him because he is her now deceased ex-best friend.
And they obviously hung about a lot as a three of them because he was there with the helping with the demolition DIY.
Well,
yeah,
it's very clear that they were all
they
very
were
good
friends.
Friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it was so devastating.
So the previous evening's very uncomfortable hitting upon, despite that, she agreed that Carl would see her the following evening.
Wait, you missed what happens to the $4 million.
Ah, yes.
Oh my
course.
God, this is one of the best scenes.
So they walk out of the bank with a check for $4 million and...
cashier's check. All she has to do is put a signature on it and that cashier's check is basically cash.
Yep. However, Sam somehow manages to convince her that if she doesn't get rid of it straight away, she's in danger because they can trace it. So what he convinces her to do is write her signature on the check, so making it sort of valid and legal, and then give the check to a couple of nuns who are outside the bank raising money.
Yes.
Raising money for the homeless.
Making money for the homeless. And next up, Sister Act.
Yay!
she finally, very reluctantly, gives the check to the...
I loved that scene. See, Whoopi Goldberg is a comedy genius. I just love her in a comedy role. She does it brilliantly. That moment where she is gripping that thing so hard and the nun is like, you're handing it to me, but you're not letting go. And she's like, I'm going to smile while I grip this so hard. Okay, you can have it.
Yep. And then she storms off in disgust and then the nun opens the... check, sees how much it's for, and then promptly faints.
Yay!
So
and then they pack up. They don't bother raising money for the rest of the day. They go and have some Prosecco. It's all good.
Book a flight to Las Vegas.
Yes.
Ice cream.
Put it all on black.
Take off the fake nuns' outfits and off they go.
Yes.
Eric Idle and Robbie Coltrane fit for love.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, so then we get the evening and we see Carl visiting, very late visiting Molly.
No, first of all, he's alone in the office and he's still trying to find out where this money is. And they have a weird amount of chairs in this office. It's like any extra space in this office, they've gone, great room for a chair here and another chair here and another chair. There's just chairs everywhere.
Okay, so
but is there
it's
a chair for each
all
worker?
The way down.
Chair for the worker and a chair for the person who's sitting with them at the desk as a client.
No,
so,
but then there's chairs where there's like, oh, there's a pillar here, so we'll put a chair up against that. And, you know, like, it was weird. There was a weird amount of chairs in that office.
I'm wondering if someone in the set design department was just bored and was like, let's see how many chairs I can fit into this office scene and see if anyone notices that it's a weird number of chairs or just let me get away with it.
I think the word chair has now lost all meaning.
Chair.
Well, speaking of words, Sam then starts playing with Carl and types murderer on the computer.
Yeah, he does.
I like that.
And then he learns how to
do
copy-paste.
Ghost thing.
Yeah.
Classic.
Who's doing this? Sam, 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 Sam. Yeah, that was good. He's been reading some Stephen King, and he's like, yeah, I can do this creepy thing.
Yeah,
and
I feel like he's really starting to get the haunting thing down.
Yeah, my note says, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
Sammy, I guess.
Call Molly. That's who he goes to see.
Yeah,
so he goes to see Molly. Molly says that she sees Oda May in the bank, although she's pretending to be someone else. Does she say Rita Miller?
She
at that
does.
Point?
She says
so obviously
Rita
he knows
Miller.
That name because he invented her.
Yeah.
So he then realizes that Oda May has the check and the money. So he then, with Willie, goes to Oda May's place and tries to get it, but they see him coming.
But before that, it's ghost punching time.
Yay!
It's ghost punching time! Sam punches Carl when he's trying to leave the flat. He's like, I'm going to use my ghost fist and punch your face.
Oh, yeah, because he knows now that Sam's there.
Yeah.
And he threatens to kill Molly with the knife. Molly comes down and then he says he's going to go, but he'll be back at 11 because that's the deadline he gave
Sam.
And then he opens the door and then he gets punched. That was funny.
So they go to Oda May's and Oda May's associates and they sisters?
Yeah,
or...
they're sisters.
So the family rush off and try and find somewhere to hide. They find rescue and sanctuary in a neighbour's apartment.
Well, they sort of push in. But the best
part
is...
Yeah, they don't
is...
give her a lot of choice in the matter.
They, in big quotes, find sanctuary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone opened the door. Yeah.
The best part is that they think that their sister's crazy just because she's talking to a white guy.
Yes.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Ghost Sam has a bit of a play with Oda May's flat by like smashing it up, and I'm thinking this
plays
is a bit harsh. Now that you're smashing it.
I want to find a different way of wording that, Joe.
Nope, yeah. I really don't. That was intentional.
So with
and then he chases him outside in front of a car, and he and Willie Lopez get squished between the car and the lorry, and then we see the light come down from heaven. No, wait, we don't.
Don't know. We see dark shadows.
Specters of defeat.
Yeah. Fun fact, the
Murderers
horrific sounds that are made by those dark shadows are really the sounds of babies' cries played at extremely slow speed backwards.
That's so creepy!
What? Yeah, this was the only bit that was really sort of like bad CG.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yeah, it looked animated and it wasn't CG, I think, was bearing in mind the quality of the
computers.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I've realised that it's old, but it was just like, this bit was really bad.
So that really emphasised the fact that he should have gone into the light.
Yeah, and then that also begs the question that he has now caused the death of someone who may not be the nicest person in the world, but still caused the death of, but yet he still, spoilers, manages to go into the light of the world.
Yeah.
Mm. Or maybe the sins of the ghost don't actually translate, and he was always going to heaven. So...
Yeah, maybe your actions as a ghost don't count against you.
That's possible.
Possibly.
That would have been good to know.
You know that you're going to heaven, so you can just spend ages just ghosting around and being a total douche.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I don't think that. No,
I don't.
I don't make the rules.
It was a supposition.
Maybe murder's not such a bad thing if it's like a really terrible person that you're murdering.
As long as it's someone.
And you are being chased by him. And,
I'm no expert on moral philosophy, so I probably shouldn't be having opinions about any of this.
Well, to be fair, it was more of a sort of accidental homicide. Because,
but he did chase him into the
traffic. Yeah, that was quite deliberate, the whole chasing him in front of a car.
Willie couldn't see the ghost, or he was running away at this point.
He did,
and things
he did
were flying.
Deliberately chase him into traffic.
Mm.
So Willie's dead. Willie's been dragged down to the bad place.
Yay, bad guy dead. That's one bad guy down.
Yeah. So Sam and Oda May return to the apartment where they convince Molly, because Molly's now gone really skeptic and believes that Odame is just a
con. I was so frustrated by this. Like, oh, we have to go through the convincing thing again? Like, this is the third round of convincing stuff, you know? Like, oh.
But he convinces her by taking a lucky penny and...
Or taking a penny.
Taking a penny, which he calls the lucky penny, and then levitating it up the door, for which I said it's just magnets. And then away from the door and into Molly's hand, which is slightly more sort of...
Slightly
proof,
more less magnets, yeah.
Yeah. Before it could have just been magnets. However, yeah, as soon as it started actually floating in midair, okay, maybe there are ghosts.
Yeah, maybe there's something to this ghost thing. Who knows? Yeah. So they have a brief conversation. They call the police because they know that Carl is coming back.
Yeah, this is the first sensible thing that they've done, I think.
Well, I don't know, because they call the police. The police are probably going to think she's just crazy anyway, because they've already dismissed her once, because they obviously don't believe in ghosts.
No.
So,
but, you know, it's the right thing to do. You should always call the police.
And then we have this really awkward, like, third wheel thing of Odame being like, I'm just going to stand over here while having to translate what he says to you, and you're all talking about wishing you could touch each other, and, oh, okay, fine, you can possess me, and, oh, that was a thing.
Yeah, so we have this. Thankfully, they show it as Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore.
Why thankfully?
It was hard enough to... Well, I mean, obviously, it's just weird, because at the back of my mind, I knew that that was Whoopi Goldberg, and that just seemed a bit out of character for Molly as much
as
anything.
And for Whoopi Goldberg. Like, Whoopi Goldberg's character was not into Molly that way.
But to be fair, Whoopi Goldberg was also being possessed, so she didn't get a lot of say in the matter.
Yeah. No, she volunteered.
And Molly was not into Odame that way.
No. But we take it that Molly accepts that this is Sam doing the
And you can tell that it's all good and fine because Unchained Melody is playing again like it was during the sexy pottery time.
Yep. Because that's their song, I guess.
Because you've got to have a hit song to go along with your movie.
Was it just the 90s thing to have sort of...
Yeah, I think that was very much a 90s thing. And maybe it was this film that started that. I'm not sure.
Well, I know Top Gun did it as well, but I can't remember if Top Gun was poor
after this.
That was 80s. Yeah, because Top Gun definitely also used the same sort of musical stylings. Yeah.
But the possession spell gets broken, thank goodness.
By Carl breaking into the apartment.
Yeah.
But possession tires you out. Oh, no.
Yeah, Sam, too exhausted to fight.
Yeah.
No. So the women run to the fire escape.
They escape via the fire escape before Carl comes in, but they accidentally clank, so he knows that because he rushes in and he doesn't know where they are, he's looking for them. And they accidentally clank, and then he goes to the window and sees them escaping up the fire escape. They go in the window to the apartment above, and they see the ladder up the side of the wall, and then there's a ladder, and then they climb up into the rafters, pull up the ladder as Carl comes in.
That was pretty smart, because I thought they were going to like push the ladder down, and then of course he'd just be able to grab it.
No, that was incredible.
No, they pulled
really
it up.
Smart,
they were smart.
Really smart ladies. And then they sort of go across the rafters as he's underneath. He has a gun. He could have just shot them at this point. And then they go up the ladder, and then he gets boxes and climbs on them, and then he grabs Odame.
Right. End result is that Odame is being held at gunpoint, demanding the check off her because he still believes that she has the money.
In all this time, though, Sam's been getting his energy back.
He has. He's been recovering. He's been quaffing the Red Bull. Other energy drinks are available. And then attacks Carl. He saves her. He saves Odame by pushing her off. But then Carl grabs hold of Molly and takes Molly hostage, pleading with Sam for the check. However, Sam just, I guess, punches the gun out of his hand.
Yeah, we don't see that part. We just see the gun moving.
Yeah, and attacks him. And Carl tries to escape through a window.
Well, first of all, he pushes this gigantic heavy hook for no reason at all that starts swinging wildly around.
Yeah, I think he was trying to skewer the ghost. That's how it read to me. He was trying to skewer the ghost.
I guess he's not thinking straight at this point.
No.
No, he's just trying to fend off this invisible sort of ghostly apparition. Although, can you be an apparition if you're invisible? Probably not.
No.
One to think of. So he swings the hook back, and it swings back and smashes the window above him, and the glass shatters, and a large chunk slides down and impales Carl.
So Carl kind of kills himself with his own damasserie.
He does. And there was quite a lot of, well, not a lot of blood, but there was definitely blood at that point, which was a little bit gory.
Yeah,
but then the light comes down from heaven to, oh wait, no! He's a bad guy.
Now we have more bad animated...
horrific, slow playing baby cries backwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's even worse at animated.
Pulling Carl down to the back.
I have a fun fact about the chase scene. That chase scene that they had just there, it was in New York. It was at night. It was really cold. Everyone else was getting bundled up, but Patrick Swayze's a ghost, so he wasn't bundled up, but his breath was showing like anyone else's would be, but he's a ghost, so they couldn't have his breath showing. So they've already got him in a flimsy shirt while everyone else is all bundled up. So what do? They make him chew ice cubes to stop his breath from showing. Bless him.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah.
That's commitment.
It is.
I mean, these days they're just CGI out, but that's
back in the
just...
days they had to do actual physical problem solving.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
In fact, quite cold.
Ooh.
So the bad guys are dead, and they've all been dragged down to the bad place. And so Sam asks Oda if Molly's all right, but miraculously, for no obvious reason. Molly can now hear him.
What?
Because the light appears.
I did not get that at all. Like, what?
Well, the light appears.
But the light appears after he's spoken to her initially.
Yeah, but it's starting to appear, which is why he's starting to appear to her.
And then, yeah, then she can see him as well. Yeah, I was just like, what?
Well, then Oda May can see him as well.
And then the longest scene in the world happens.
It's time for Sam to make his way...
To move on.
Go into the light, Sam.
To walk into the light and be taken away, despite his murderous rage earlier. He still qualifies for the good place.
They're bad people, you know. What you going to do?
It was self-defense. Or defense of others.
I'm not sure chasing someone into traffic really counts as self-defense.
So Molly gives him a goodbye kiss.
Weird ghost kiss. That was weird.
Weird ghost kiss. And then Sam thanks Oda May for help.
Sam never says thank you to Oda May. In this whole film, he never thanks her.
I thought he did at the very end.
Yeah. No, I wrote here specifically, he doesn't say thank you to her. I was like waiting for him to say thank you, and then he didn't. He's a douche.
I think he says it without words.
He was,
he was too hung up on
telling Molly that I love you instead of ditto, that he forgot to actually say, so thanks, I completely ruined your life here, Oda May, but you helped us out there, thanks very much.
But no, he has a scene with Oda May that is gratitude conveyed. It's just, you know, sort of subtle and wordless without him actually saying thank you.
Okay, well, I think it needed the words.
The words do help at times. But he turns, he walks into the light and then onwards... into, you know, the sort of traditional glowing white where there's sort of ghostly figures who surround him and welcome him to...
This whole scene takes about 3 hours.
Yeah, it does seem to be quite a slow scene and sort of the... This is the end of the film, but it does come to a slightly juddering
stop. I would have liked
there.
This film a lot more. I would have left the end of the film feeling a lot more positive about this film if they'd spent half the amount of time on that scene at the end.
Yeah. It didn't wreck
was meant
it for
to be
me, but it was a little
poignant.
Bit longer than it needed to be, I feel.
It's not like the end of Force Awakens, where, I mean, it's like, oh my god, just take the lightsaber.
No, that does seem
we'll
to go on.
We'll be covering that in a future
podcast. No arguments on that one. I mean, how many times can you, you know, orbit a camera around these two people before
so,
they do anything?
So, reportedly, it took months for Jerry Zucker and Bruce Joel Rubin to come up with Sam's last line in the film. Can you remember what that line was?
Well, it wasn't ditto.
It wasn't ditto. It took them months to come up with this, and it was awful.
What was it? Because I don't actually remember.
He said, "It's amazing, Molly. The love inside. You take it with you. See ya."
Oh yeah.
It should have been ditto.
That
ditto.
That was honestly terrible.
It was
that
so
was
bad. And
not...
that took them months to come up with. Really? Really? Oh, God. It was so bad. It was just like the cheesiest line.
It should have ended after Ditto. Yeah. It should have been the last word.
The film ends and we get more Battlestar Galactica music. And that's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen.
So Patrick Swayze said that Sam Wheat was the hardest role he ever played in his career because he had to be an observer to the action rather than a participant. And it was because of that very reason that Bruce Willis had said he wasn't interested in the role. Who was at the time married to Demi Moore, so there would have been chemistry between the characters. He said he didn't want to because he would have been an observer rather than a participant. Of course, he did go on to play a ghost in a film after that.
Ah,
no spoilers.
No, wait, no spoilers. Spoiler.
I didn't mention the film.
I did notice.
This is true.
No.
That could be any movie in which he maybe plays a ghost. Yes. Now you're going to go forward watching every movie with Bruce Willis in it and trying to figure out whether or not he's a ghost in it.
Fifth Element. There you go.
Oh, I can't believe
you said that. I
did notice that Patrick Swayze was they were very deliberate to have him not using things like banisters and going downstairs and such things like that, and also sort of not interacting with people as he was there. Obviously, they wanted to keep the budget down as much as possible, so there wasn't a lot of unnecessary walking through people and walking through objects.
You have to play it very differently in order to not interact with things and people as you naturally would do. So
absolutely.
I've got a not a fun fact, but an oh for goodness sake fact.
Do go on.
At
theatrical showings in, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Monterrey, Mexico.
No, you did it perfectly well.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've got some Spanish to come, so that's not going to go well. women in the audience were given envelopes marked Solo Para Mueres. Which means for women only. So that's, just substitute in what I was trying to butcher for women only. Containing tissues. Because obviously all the women and none of the men are going to cry at this movie. So
seriously?
Tissues for women only. Yeah, you see why this was an oh for goodness sake fact. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
that
definitely
absolutely an oh for goodness sake fact.
Yes.
I am mad.
Yeah.
Sort of
I was really mad when I read that.
Fact.
Were those tissues sponsored by Reebok?
probably. I think we can just assume they were. Final fact for you. Death count in this movie, 4. Ghost count, 20.
Nice. So who are the four then? You've got obviously Patrick Swayze's character. You've got
Carl,
the
Willy Lopez, and the guy in the hospital.
Yes, because we don't see... In the hospital, there's the scene where he's talking to the old guy and he is waiting for his wife
to move on. Yep.
But we don't see that, do we? He just disappears, so... Yeah, four. Okay.
Death count 4.
A death count of 4. One of the lower ones.
And a ghost count of 20.
Not the lowest, because I suspect one of the Disney films will be the lowest, but...
Oh, I do have another fun fact. Well, it's not so much a fun fact, but more of a observation of the time. That romance films weren't really big at the box office, and yet Ghost was the highest grossing of the year. And this was the same year that we had Pretty Woman come out as well and do very, very, very well at the box office. And it was those two films in 1990 doing so well at the box office that kind of reinvigorated the romance film market.
So what we're saying is we could have been watching Pretty Woman and not Ghost.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I think we got the better deal there.
I think so too, because this wasn't just a romance film and it had no hookers. It was a supernatural comedy crime drama romance.
Indeed.
I mean, what more do you want from your romance?
Let's get some final thoughts. Sammy, final thoughts.
It was honestly better than I thought it was going to be. It was silly, but it was generally, I think, an enjoyable kind of silly. And I did not dislike this movie at all. I would give it a solid 7 out of 10, for sure.
Good, excellent. Daisy?
I think if you were going to see this movie because you wanted to watch a romance film, you might well have been disappointed, because there was very little romance in it for what is kind of billed as a romance film. And I like my romances that way. So, yeah, it was a lot better than I was anticipating it being.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I was necessarily anticipating. I was bored through some of it, but I didn't hate it in any way, shape, or form. And some of it I actually genuinely enjoyed. So that was a pleasant surprise, certainly, because I think in my head I got it that I was going to hate this film and it was going to be a disaster.
You did a bit, yeah.
And it really, really wasn't. So that's good. And finally, Joe, final thoughts.
I really like the films around about this time because they don't make me angry.
Great.
They're like a lot of the old ones we've been watching, they're so bleeding sexist. It's just painful. I mean, this one had some, you know, uncomfortable moments in, but, you know, Demi Moore doesn't have to, you know, get out her boobs, and Whoopi Goldberg is just amazing. But, you know, it's a really good, solid film that doesn't rely on tropes. Well, not any obvious tropes, but it doesn't rely on tropes or sex or whatever to make it a good film.
It could easily have been Molly being a damsel in distress and needing to be rescued by a man. Exactly. And it never went that way. Yeah.
And this is why I love this era of films. There are just so many good films around about this time. And it's a solid film. I've forgotten how much I loved it when I watched it again, that I wasn't even, yeah, I was, it was just one of those films. It was like Cinderella. I was really happy to watch it.
Aww,
I really enjoyed it. And I didn't need distracting by games or what have you. And yeah.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And as I said, I didn't hate it anywhere near as much as I thought. I didn't hate it. I mean, I'll be honest. I thought I was going to, and I didn't.
I wonder why you were so against it.
I think I built it up in my head that it was something that it wasn't. And again,
that it was a romance.
It was what you expect from it.
A lot more sort of romance than it was, because that's kind of how it's been built in popular culture. And even that thing you mentioned about like giving tissues to the sort of female audience members with, you know, penis on it. It's just,
exactly.
But that's not what it was.
Yeah.
It was, you know, sort of, it was a dude who died and then had to solve his own murder.
It was a love story. It was a bit of a love story in it,
but that's not the only thing that it was.
Yeah. It was a love story, a ghost story, but it was a story about betrayal. It was a story about friendship, and it was comedic as well. You know, it had those elements in it. It wasn't just one thing. It was a
supernatural comedy, crime drama, romance.
Yes, exactly.
Unlike the next film which we are watching, which will be 20 years earlier, and 1970s Airport.
Can I return to Ghost momentarily? I think one of the things that I thought about in hindsight after watching Ghost was the fact that the highest grossing movies for each year, we've definitely had a kind of two categories. They've either been lots of action in them, or they've been a kids movie, and a romance didn't fit into either of those categories. So in hindsight, I'm not surprised this actually had a lot of action in it. And I understand more then why it was the highest grossing movie of the year. So I think kind of going into it, my expectations should have been a bit more modified on the knowledge of what we've been experiencing so far with the highest grossing movies and what we've learnt from that. So
yes, thank you for listening. That was indeed Ghost. Spooky. And next time we will be watching Airport 1970. I would like to thank you all for listening. I of course would also like to thank my fellow podcasters. Thank you, Joe.
Yes, thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Daisy.
Ditto.
And thank you, Sammy.
Boo.
Boo, indeed. Or possibly do.
And thank you, Dave.
Thank you all. Thank you all for listening. And we will be back in a couple of weeks' time for Airport. But until then, goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcasting Network. Find us on Twitter at @podcast_thing and on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.